Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Hey, you missed 2 hours of Leading Edge Medicine already. 2 hours. We start every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock on a different station, but that's okay, from 8 to 10. And then these 2 hours from 10 to noon. If you would like to know where we are for all 4 hours, simply go to our website, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top of the page, and it'll show you where we are for all 4 hours. And the other good news about doing that is you can also have access to all of our previous shows, hour by hour, listed out. You go back for months. And so if you hear something today, maybe during this hour or next hour, that's really, really good. You want to hear it again, or you want your wife to hear it, or your dad, or your cousin, or a coworker, because it relates to maybe a need they have. Then, again, simply go to lmclinic.com, push the podcast button, and boom, you've got access to everything. All right. If you've got questions today, I've got my two regulars, Dr. Jerry Mixon, founder, chief medical officer of Longevity Medical Clinic, and Dr. Samara Umat, assistant medical director of Longevity Medical Clinic. And they're both here ready and willing and able to take your calls. Anything goes. If you have a question, you just simply call the toll-free number 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. And we'll start taking your calls right now. Jerry, at the beginning of the first show at 8 o'clock, you kind of did a review. I had mentioned I'd seen this article on masks and referred to Sweden. And Sweden was only 5% compliant, according to this particular study, international study, 5% compliant with wearing masks. And yet they've got a very different story than ours. And we apparently are 70%, 75% compliant in wearing masks. And so maybe you can just a quick review.
Well, you know, in New York, when they canvassed the hospitalized COVID patients, they found that 85% of the people hospitalized in New York with COVID claimed that they wore their mask virtually all the time. Mm. So
didn't keep them from getting it.
And you know, and mask orthodoxy has changed. You remember when the first virus first came out, all of the national experts were telling us not to go out and buy masks, to wear them, that they might even make things worse for us. And then the orthodoxy changed, and now everybody is supposed to wear masks, you know, apparently, even when sleeping in bed with your loved one.
So they weren't suggesting that.
Really. No, not really.
No.
That's tongue-in-cheek.
I'll bet you there's those that are doing it, though.
The same ones who wear the mask while driving their car by themselves probably wear it in bed when making love. Yes. Some people. Anyway, we don't really know. We do know that, you know, masks can do a pretty good job of filtering out. The N95 and the KN95, you know, will filter out 95% of the small particles, which is pretty safe. The 2- and 3-layer cloth cotton masks are pretty good, and they got the advantage you can throw them in the washing machine.
Yep.
You know, you should buy half a dozen of them, and each night when you take it off, throw it in the wash and get it, you know, and clean it, wash it off, and put a new one on. And then you can use them over and over and over. You know, the $10 a piece cost you $70 for a week's supply, and you just reuse them. Mm. The problem we get with masks, of course, is people are cheap and they own a mask or two. They wear the mask. If there are germs on it, they take it off, get the germs all over their hands, fold it up, stick it in their pocket or their purse. And then when they go in the next door, they take it back out, once more spreading the stuff all over their hands, and put it back on their face. Mm. That sort of mask use is probably how those 85 people that got in hospitalized,
sure,
85% were using their masks.
I've heard you say some pretty negative things. Well, maybe not negative is the word, about the gaiter, the neck.
Well, the neck, the single layer neck gaiter is worthless. But that's why people use it when they can run, because you can just, the air goes through it very easily, and so you don't get short of breath. So you can exercise while wearing a neck gaiter over your nose and mouth. But it's worthless for virus protection. Okay. If you're going to wear a mask, and by the by, I wear my masks, and I wear them faithfully whenever I go into, you know, tight populated areas. If I'm going in the store, if I go in Fred Meyer, if I go in Metropolitan Market, you know, I put my mask on,
sure,
before,
mm-hmm,
I walk in the store, and yeah, I walk out of the store, I take my mask back off. CDC, Center for Disease Control, criteria for mask use outdoors is if you're going to be within 6 feet of somebody for more than 15 minutes, you should wear a mask.
Mm. Okay. In other words, if you just walk up to somebody and say, is the grocery store to the left or to the right?
Yeah, and they punch you in the nose because you're not wearing a mask. Yeah, they did the wrong thing. Because yeah, your risk of catching coronavirus with casual transient contacts is extremely low.
Yeah.
Okay. Your biggest risk is indoors. The three of us sitting here in this very small studio for 4 hours at a stretch, it is much higher than if we were out walking in the park together.
Sure.
Mm. Just, that's the way it is. So when indoors, when you're around a lot of other people, wear your mask. If you're out on your own, you don't need it. Now, that's the real world.
Mm. Sounds good. All righty. Let us do this here. Have we got some callers? Yes, we do. Let's go to Seattle and talk to Mike. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about my high estradiol concentrations recently.
Okay.
For the past 8 years, my LabCorp hormone blood test showed my estradiol was in the 22 to 24 picograms per milliliter. Mm-hmm. On September 10, 21st, and October 21st, my estradiol was in the 54 to 72 range.
My goodness.
And one of those days, my total testosterone decreased down to around 300, which is probably the lowest I've ever seen on a test.
Uh-huh.
So I'm taking 1/4 milligram, probably won't pronounce this correctly,
Anastrozole.
Thank you. Once a week. So, what might should I do?
Stop the anastrozole.
I beg your pardon?
No.
Listen to me.
Okay.
Stop the anastrozole. Go back. Retake your test.
Well, no, we want to retake the test on the same dose, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, you know, I probably got too many tests here because there's a mix of my LabCorp test with your longevity and medical clinic,
okay,
which I gather is also using LabCorp equipment. Of course, they're not all the same day.
Correct. It's not all the same because sometimes there's a confounding protein molecule that can falsely elevate estradiol levels.
Which is what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
For what we have found is that with many of the laboratory techniques that are used to check estradiol, people that are on anastrozole seem to produce a protein that interferes with the accuracy of the test and will give us artificially high estradiol levels. And we found that with a fair number of people that have been on anastrozole for long periods of time. If they start off on anastrozole and it brings their estrogen down, And over time, we were finding that their estrogen started rising and rising, and we'd raise the anastrozole, and it would keep rising. And we said, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Well, I've only been on it about a month and a half. So I noticed that one test I had, which was the day after I took that 1/4 milligram, my estradiol was low.
That's right.
And that's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just wondered if it was something where I had to take it more often than once a week.
Well, it depends. The half-life of anastrozole is about 54 hours. So, you know, when
about
you...
2 days, huh?
Yeah. And that's the half-life. So you take your anastrozole, 2 days later, you've used up half of it. 2 days after that, you're down to a quarter of what you started with. So usually anastrozole twice a week is more than adequate to control.
Yeah, well, maybe maybe that would be maybe something to consider.
Yeah.
Getting my one of your doc to give me a prescription for something for twice a week.
And that's certainly possible. You know, because that has always been our response, is if the estrogen isn't coming down, well, then we add some more anastrozole. But what we found in a small percentage of guys is that raising the anastrozole actually ended up raising the estrogens. And what we found when we were investigating, it's the estrogen isn't really going up. What was happening is, in a response to the anastrozole, those men make a protein that we have not been able to identify that, that interferes with the test result and gives us an artificially elevated estrogen. And so with them, we have to send it off to the lab and say, we want you to use something like a mass spectrometer to test this, a very different sort of test modality, and found out their estrogen was actually quite low. In fact, we were pounding them with all that extra anastrozole trying to lower it, and we were lowering it. Mm-hmm. We were just getting a erroneous test result because of something they were producing in response to the anastrozole. So... life ain't simple in medicine, you know?
No, I know. I know. I've been in the field for over 30 years.
All right.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call.
Yes.
Good stuff. And with that, we need to go to a break. And I should also say we've got all the lines open right now. So if you call with your health question, then you'll be next, or you'll be very soon after that. So call us right now. Lines are open, 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. We'll be right back.
I would like to thank you for having this program and for having your longevity program. If I listen on the radio, I always learn something, and it keeps me on the straight and narrow. I think, boy, I need to take some more responsibility for myself.
Mr. Sandman.
Mr. Sandman.
Yes.
Bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
18 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Pete Talbot, but with me, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. If you've got a question for us, we've got a couple of lines open, 1-888-312-5757. Call right now, and we'll get to you quickly. And in the meantime, we will go to Mary from Eglin. I'm not sure how to pronounce the city. Mary, where are you from again?
North Kitsap, Eglin.
Eglin, okay. Interesting. Thank you. Well, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm interested if Dr. Mixon heard the report about the cancer-causing fibers in the blue mask, and also how do we protect our eyes, because I understand that the virus is small enough to enter our body through the eyes.
Well, it can, but your risk of transmission through the eye is pretty small, unless somebody is, you know, sneezing directly in your face, or you get it on your hands, and then you rub your eyes. And the most common cause of transmission through the eyes or the nose is actually people rubbing their eyes and nose, or sticking their fingers in their mouth, rubbing their lips. You know, humans keep our, we touch our face an awful lot.
Yeah, we do.
Just, you know, go through the day, how often you touch your face. And you know, our hands are grubby things. We touch everything and pick up the virus. So, you know, I don't wear glasses all the time. I don't wear protective glasses when I'm around. I just wear my mask. I do see the occasional person wearing those, you know, looks like they're just coming from the shooting range, wearing those clear wraparound glasses. But statistically, your chances of catching it just from free virus particles floating into your eye are extremely low. So I don't worry about that. You know, as for the blue mask, I don't know. I have not seen anything about that.
I just heard the report on television this week. I wish I had recorded it.
Huh. Well, I don't know. Have you got your laptop open?
I do have my laptop open. Search. You're right. I have not heard anything myself. So this was a little bit of a surprise to me. There is something here. Those blue masks are giving you lung cancer is the title of published October 29th, 2020. And it's by Guy Crittenden, from former editor of Hazmat Management. And I don't know what the article says.
Okay.
But clearly there is some information about it.
Yeah.
Well, we can look into that this week and maybe address it next Saturday.
Yep.
That's the best we can do, Mary.
Yeah. You know, my guess is there may be one particular brand that has a fiberglass or an asbestos base to the paper. I don't know. But we'll look and see.
All righty. Thanks, Mary. Okay. There you go. Well, we've got all the lines open at 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. We had a caller call in, wanted to know, do you miss doing seminars?
Do I miss doing seminars?
Sometimes, you've only done 1,000 of them.
I know. And I really enjoyed them. Yeah. And I would like to do some more seminars, but as I've told you before, I would like to do more in-depth seminars. I'd like to spend, for instance, a whole morning talking about a topic such as, you know, heart disease or cancer prevention / recovery or, you know,
senescent cell therapy,
yes, yes. Cognition. The nice thing about the seminars we were doing, you know, I had about an hour and a half, about 90 minutes to do an overview of what we do at Longevity.
Right.
I think we're covering that pretty well with the HA appointments, the health analysis appointments. But what I wish I had the opportunity to do were some more in-depth teaching sessions on a particular subject, one subject at a time. And maybe set up a series of 4 or 5 lectures over the course of a year.
Yes, good idea.
Covered specific stuff. You know, the problem, of course, is that if you get a decent turnout, you end up having to pay thousands and thousands of dollars to rent the space.
Yes.
The conference space.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a limit to how many thousands of dollars I can afford to pay for the privilege of teaching people stuff that are already patients and there is no financial return for it.
Yeah.
We aren't selling anything. We aren't doing, it's pure education.
Mm-hmm.
So if we did that, we'd have to charge, you know, have some sort of fee to cover the expenses. I don't need to get paid to do it for myself, but I hate to have to pay for the privilege of providing a service to somebody.
But, you know, if you're doing it just for our patients, you could even do something in our clinic waiting area in Kirkland.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a small group.
If it's a small enough group.
Yeah.
We're limited to 20-some people there.
Right.
And, you know, if I'm going to spend 4 or 5 hours, I'd rather do it for a large enough group to make it worth my time.
That's true. That is true.
Real comfortable there. Yes, you can get 20, 25 people in there, but that's sort of kneecap to kneecap, side, you know, sitting side by side.
And right now, in the coronavirus environment,
you can't even do that.
They wouldn't permit us to do it anyway.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, I would like to have a ballroom or a larger area where I could get a pretty good crowd together and then just do some real teaching.
We've been talking seriously about this for about a year, and then the pandemic hit.
That's right.
It's just, you know, seminars are just a thing of the past, at least for now.
Yeah, and of course, when everything's over, I'd still love to set something like that up on a cruise. Go do a cruise of the Mediterranean, and each of our days at sea, we could do several hours of teaching.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
For fun.
Well, you know, personally, of course, I'm not excited about that at all because you're not taking me with you. So what's the point?
But I may take Sunil. And, he can talk about that.
If he goes, then I go. Because Jerry's comment to me was that I need to be here to manage the clinics while he's gone.
That's why you're my assistant medical director. You had to run the clinics while I'm off on a cruise somewhere.
Right.
I predict we'll be doing a cruise, but I also predict it's not going to be in the next 6 to 10 months.
No.
Let's get people over their fears and concerns. I've already paid for a cruise that is on hold. We were supposed to cruise from Rome and back to Rome on a 2-week cruise back in June. And so I'm going to cruise again, but I'm going to do it on my timeline.
See, this past summer I had to cancel a trip too, but it wasn't a cruise. We were going to go to Bavaria.
Oh.
Mm.
And So we got a... There's a summer camp, a 3-week resident camp that we're going to park Ivory in so she could practice German.
Give her
3 weeks of immersion in the German language with other kids.
Nice. And then,
give her three languages.
Give her a third language. And then we would, you know, Bending and I could run all over, and then we grab her on the weekends.
Yeah.
And then she'd be back in, you know, resident camp for the...
Interesting.
Week.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, you'll do that maybe next summer.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Because I wanted to have more than two languages. You know, that's silly, don't we?
Well, the younger they are, the faster they learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Hey, let's go to a cell phone caller and talk to Dan. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dan.
Good morning,
Dr. Vigatis.
Well, since you want to go to Germany, I thought I'd give you a little trip.
Well, thank you.
At any rate, I'm just wondering, I am one of your former clients.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering what your success-failure rate is with your payments, how many are very successful, and what percentage, for some reason or another, are unsuccessful.
You know, it varies. And what I'm finding is it's in direct relationship with how much effort the person is willing to put into it. If people really follow the program, our success rate is probably up there around 85-90%. And my guesstimate on that is we lose most of our people the first year when they discover they actually have to change their life and do something. And that's when we get our big loss. After that... we lose about 12% per year, right? So that means that 88% of the people that are with us at more than a year are happy and stay.
A very long time.
And we have people that are still there, you know, 15, 18, 20 years later. But what we find in that first year is that people that will actually do what we ask them to do and work the program.
Compliance.
They do very well. And those that don't, those expect that somehow we're going to do it for them, they drop out that first year.
And there are many, many patients that are happy with just taking a pill, just taking a cream, but they won't do anything about their exercise, their diet, their general lifestyles?
No, they don't.
And they admit it.
There's a lot of times, you know, it's very difficult to answer what you're saying because we don't know what we've prevented for them because it never happened.
Yeah.
But had they not come in to see us, they might have, something bad might have happened. I have a patient and I called him once and he was in the ICU when he picked up the phone and I was absolutely devastated when he said, I'm in the ICU, doctor. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just spoke to you a little while ago. What happened? But he was very clear. I mean, talking to me from an ICU is not an easy thing to do. And he said, you know, it was a heart rhythm disturbance. And the doctor said, if I wasn't in such good health as I am now, I would not have made it. And his comment to me was, I'm never leaving your program. So, you know, how do you know what you've done and what you've not done? There's no way of measuring how many cancers you've prevented, whose life you've prolonged, how you've helped them. It's subjective is one thing, but objective and long-term satisfaction is another thing. And a part of it is also your own belief. You know, has it really done something for you? I can't say whether it prevents you from getting cancer or whether it prevents you from getting dementia, but statistics show that whatever we do does generally tend to help and protect you in the long run. So that's a hard one to answer.
I'm really glad you called, Dan. Keep listening, Dan. But Jerry, that's a legitimate question to
ask.
It's a very legitimate question.
Of course it is. It's just a difficult question to answer because it depends on your criteria. You know, what I was going by as I was talking is basically patient satisfaction.
Right.
People that put the effort in and do what we ask them to do, do very well.
Granted.
And then they're happy and they stay.
Granted. 100%.
But then things happen through the years. People get divorced. People lose jobs. People have, you know, different changes.
Move away.
A certain number of people are going to fall off through the years.
Sure.
But what we're finding is that if they'll follow the program and they're with us at the end of a year, they stay with us a long time. So we have to say at least their feeling, their belief, they think their life has changed enough that they want to keep paying the bills and keep coming.
Yeah.
So, but you know, even that's not always the case. I'm thinking right now of a physician, a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a lot of doctors that are patients,
right.
MDs. This is a physician who is a very smart person. They are a subspecialty caregiver. They are published. They've published many papers. They are well respected in the profession. He has been a patient for several years, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, a long time. Every year, writes a check, pays his bill in full in advance, takes the hormones and the supplements, and does nothing to lifestyle.
Mm.
Is a 100-pound overweight diabetic. And when I have chastised the doctor about his lifestyle and the fact that he's not taking care of himself, his answer is, but Jerry, I don't diet and I don't exercise. I had to say, yeah, and that's why you're going to die a miserable death, damn it. You know, writing me a check doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
You've got to do something. So, and that's just proof that really smart people can do really foolish things.
Well, it's not all foolish, Jerry. If he's reusing the cream and you're changing his endocrine support, you are helping him be better today with it than without it.
And he recognizes he's better with us than he was without us. And so he is better.
Yes.
And that's why he stays. But as a physician, I keep looking at this terrible, terrible lifestyle and the health problems that he's got and saying, damn it, doctor, you know better than this.
Yeah.
No, sure. Please change.
Yeah, well, we can't do that for them.
You can only
guide and coach and coax, but they have to be able to do it for themselves. And that's what I've told all of my patients. I can give you the advice. I cannot do it for you.
Yes. And, you know, I learned many years ago, smart people do stupid stuff.
Sure.
I'm a smart person, and I've done plenty of stupid stuff in my life. So, you know, I learned that lesson on myself.
Yeah.
So I can't criticize other people that do stupid stuff. Still, I wish they would not do those particular stupid things because, well, damn it, I want them to succeed.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
But that was a good question. I'm not sure we've ever had that specifically asked before. But it's a good question.
Yeah.
Bottom line is the statistics are great, especially if you're serious. If you really are not happy with your aging process, then making a free health analysis appointment will be the first step you're going to want to take. We give you two free tests. We give you the blood test and then the special in-body test. And with those two tests, you'll understand some of your basic health risks. That's the first step. And then you'll see what are the other options. Once you have information, then you can make an intelligent decision, yes or no, about becoming a patient at Longevity Medical Clinic. We're not asking you just to blindly make the decision right now, even though a lot of people do. They just want to, they call and boom, they know it. But just make a free health analysis appointment. We even give you, still at least through the end of the year now, $100 of longevity supplements just for making and for having the appointment. Again, do that at lmclinic.com. And we'll be back with more calls, more questions, and more answers.
The thing I like the most about everything that I've learned from Dr. Mixon is it all makes very logical and intuitive sense. It's not something I really have to wonder, well, I wonder if that's really true. It just, this whole encompassing approach, it always makes a lot of sense to me, and that's really what sold me on the whole package.
Everybody's going out and having fun. I'm just a fool for staying home and having none. I can't get over how she set me free. Oh, lonesome me.
Roger Miller.
Yep.
Hey, welcome back. 27 minutes past the hour. If you have a question, we have one line open at 1-888-312-5757. I love that little testimonial of the guy coming back from the break. He says, you know, when you keep listening, you keep understanding, you learn more and more. It makes so much sense. Speaking of what you guys are teaching our radio listeners, it just makes sense. And so that's kind of fun. That's why we do the show, to educate. We were just also talking about a patient that we've had for, 12 years? We don't mention names.
Obviously not.
You know, okay, for 12 years. A pretty well-known name in the Seattle area, just only coincidentally, a professional, and but newly married. And he brought in his new wife, who is sort of in the early stages of learning about this whole area. Mm-hmm. And it was an enjoyable process,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Her eyes were opened with a few of the things that she's
learned. This is what I love about what I do, is educating them about what they know. They're so entrenched in normal medicine that they really don't pay attention to anything outside the norm until they are either dissatisfied with their own health or with what they've been given or prescribed. And then they look for alternatives. And here, too, you know, things were not working out to the best until we talked about certain issues and certain functions of normal endocrine system that can help improve for her, you know, improve muscle mass, decrease inflammation, and so on and so forth. So, and then the journey was interesting. The initial lab work was very telling because the person is very healthy and didn't think there was anything wrong until you do the labs.
And all of a sudden, okay. And I think this person, this new wife, is in her 60s, and she's starting to realize things are changing and she's not that happy with them. And so this is just, it's the educational process that people will wake up and realize that with primary care physicians doing certain things, they don't have the time nor the inclination to deal with some of the leading edge things that we know about and that we do so well. So with that said, let us go to Steve in Bellevue. Steve, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So hello, good
morning. Talk about primary care physicians and in this window for Medicare signing up, I'm curious if there are doctors that are compatible with the longevity program. My wife's actually a patient of yours, and if this is a time we change our primary care physician, we'd like to know somebody that's compatible and on the same page with the longevity program.
You should come to the clinic and have the, or have, call them and have them mail you a copy of physicians that are supportive of us. We have a referral list that we have compiled over the years, and we revised that list about a year or so ago. So have our team mail you that list. And if, you know, again, this is a large area, so you may not know anybody within your area, but it's worth looking at that list and then going to that system if there is, you know, like Kaiser or Blue Cross or whatever you have, whatever you're looking for. So go ahead and have them send you that list.
I think that can even be emailed, mailed or emailed. So, yes.
Okay. Well, perfect. The information's available. That's what I was interested in.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. That is. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. A couple of times what we've done is we put together a little survey, and we'll ask each patient when they come in, you know, who is your primary care doctor? Are they supportive of what you're doing? Are they neutral or are they opposed? And then we just kept a list of those supportive guys.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. We ought to do that, you know, every 2 or 3 years just to update the list.
Yeah, probably do that again. Probably do that again. Even though I had a very good friend who listens to the show and just a month ago, coincidentally, asked the very same question because he and his wife, their primary care physicians, were actually in direct opposition in almost everything we do at Longevity. And they were so appalled at the lack of knowledge that their primary care physician had. They just said, we have to have a new one. We have to have a different one. And the reason I'm telling the story is they got a referral from our office. And they're very, very, very happy now with their primary care physician who says they need longevity. That primary care physician said, oh, yes, I can't do those things.
For all we know.
Yeah.
That primary care physician might be a patient at longevity.
Well, that's true because we have
a lot of physicians that are patients.
That is so right. So thank you for that call, Steve. Let's go to Lakewood and talk to Harry.
Hello, Harry.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning,
I've only been a patient for 2.5 years, along with my wife, and we've been sure glad we signed up for your program. I think it's doing us very well. So,
good. Thank
you. My issue is from my wife called up last January, referenced my high ferritin level. I don't know if you remember, but anyway, my labs have been trending low for almost borderline anemic, and so I just to let you know, I do go to the Tacoma Clinic. The doctor there told me about a ferritin level, and because I told her I was taking a multiple vitamin with iron, which at that last phone conversation you told both my wife and I to get off of it, the iron, since we're both 72 years old and we don't need that iron anymore. But anyway, my initial test back in January, end of January, was 833, and the ferritin range is supposed to be under 400. And then I did a retest. You suggested that, which came out. That was on February 12th, and that was 677. And the end of July, it was 700, and then just last month on the 23rd of October is 620. One of the doctors at Tacoma suggested I donate blood, because I guess that may treat it. I called Bloodworks Northwest, and they wouldn't take me because of my prostate radiation treatments that I had back in April. They want to have a year between last treatment and giving blood. So then I had a full lab done along with a full iron panel, and everything was normal as far as the iron panel. I mean, the iron was within the normal limits. I wish I'd give you the numbers, but the clinic sent me a copy via encrypted email, and I printed off a copy from my primary physician And then I saved it electronically, and then I went to open it this morning, and it's not there. So it must have a life. It must have died in there. I don't know if there's a time limit on getting it off the out of the folder, but the folder was empty. But I don't know what the true numbers were. I just remember all the blood work is normal, except the hemoglobin and hemocratic and what else is there? Red blood count. Those are all still low in the red, in the green, or bumping the red. Mm-hmm. So the question is do I just, the ferritin is trending lower from the E3 down to 620. So do I just keep sapling?
Yeah, I'd love to see it down to 500 next, 400 after that. But
well, the question is, why do you have hemochromatosis? Is it primary or is it secondary? And then is it genetic or not? Because a lot of times it is genetic. And we won't know that until a lot of other tests are done. So I start with the TIBC sometimes. Mm-hmm. But because I know that this will require a hematologist look, I usually just tend to refer my patients to the hematologist so they can do all their labs under insurance coverage. Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Easiest way to do it. And if you do carry the gene, it's a dominant gene, so it might be present in the family. And the problem with that is it is a high risk for dementia and joint symptoms. Yeah. So you do want to know if you have that genetic mutation.
Okay. Good. My primary care physician wanted to know if I wanted to go see a hematologist, but I said, well, let's... Yeah. Since it's trending lower, let's wait for another 4 months. But
yeah, well,
okay,
you know,
I'm going to have a lab review with the Tacoma doctor here at the end of the month, so I'll talk about a hematologist with what they recommend then.
Good. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's nice that it's trending down.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
But as I wish it was down at 500 or 400, because when you're up in this range, you've got an iron storage issue, and you can be doing some liver injury.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we would love it to be a whole lot lower. And as she pointed out, too, this is important for you to know, because if this is a genetic trait, there's a high probability you've passed it on to some of your offspring. You know, so you want to know it for yourself, but also for them.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I got a son and daughter, so, and grandkids, yep. So I don't want to pass it on.
That's right. Well, of course, it's a little late. You've already passed it or not, but what we want to do is know if you passed it or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are, you know, homozygous dominant on this and you're going to kick it off to the kids for sure, then you need to get them in and get them tested too.
Yeah, because you can get them help. You know, I've had patients who've tested positive, have the genetic trait, they've been dominant, but you can do stuff about it. It's not a death sentence or anything like that.
But the earlier in life you intervene, the better off you are.
Right, and you can avoid side effects.
And with that, Harry, thank you. Great call. Glad you called. Good question. All right, we've got another 10 minutes in this hour, but remember, we go until noon. So you might even want to call a friend or two and have them join us. We're going to take some more calls, including when we come back. Steve from Shoreline has a question about, is there any special prep for getting the shingles shot? Well, I think that's his with no pain. He's heard that they're painful, I think. Anyway, we'll let him ask the question. But we've got three lines open, so why don't you call with your questions at 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. Hey, and the music. Listen to the music. I get to go to Hawaii in 2 weeks.
Stop.
Don't worry. I'm going to call in advance and get him, you know, sequestered for 14 days.
Don't do that. Then he'll spend a month there.
We needed something to make us feel younger and healthier. I didn't want to do it by myself. I knew that Larry had to come with me.
Since I've become a longevity patient, I just feel wonderful now. If you're thinking about attending a seminar, go. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Longevity is a miracle for us.
come on like a dream. Peaches and cream, lips like strawberry wine. You're 16, you're beautiful, and you're mine. You're all ribbons and curls. Oh, what a girl, eyes that twinkle and shine.
This song should be illegal. She's only 16. I'm not sure. He sounds a lot older than 16.
He does.
But I did love that song back in 1962. Yep. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We've got a couple of lines open. We're going to take a break here in about 7 minutes for 2 minutes. And but if you have a question, go ahead and call right now, 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. We'll quickly go to Shoreline, talk to Steve. Hey, Steve, we're glad you called.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, thank you for being there. A couple of quick questions. First, a few months ago, I went for my first shingles shot and ended up getting quite sick afterwards. I spiked a fever and muscle ache, and I was out of was in bed for a day and a half.
My goodness.
Yeah, Thursday, I got my second single shot, and the exact same thing happened.
Wow.
So my question with regards to that is my wife is going to be getting her first shot. Is there anything she can do beforehand to minimize those effects?
I can't think of anything.
Take a Tylenol.
Yeah. I mean, when I got my shingle shot, I had a sore arm for 3 days. That was about it.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so, I mean, when I first heard that you were calling about the subject, my rather flippant response was, yes, three shots of bourbon before they inject you.
It didn't work.
He won't feel the pain.
He knew. I want to know something. I've had shots over the years. I mean, I travel internationally, and yeah. I've had lots of shots for Africa and Middle East and stuff. The shingles shot, it hurts like the dickens.
I know.
What is, why?
I don't know, but it does.
Oh, my gosh. I thought, what the?
I know.
What is going on?
The guy stuck the needle in my arm, and I would have sworn he put it in the bone.
Yeah, I know.
It hurt.
But I was more concerned about the fever and the fatigue.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Having to be in bed for a day and a half.
Yeah, I have not heard that reaction from anybody else. I mean, that is the strongest reaction I have heard.
Odds are your wife is
may not have that at all. You could take a Tylenol before she goes in.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't help. That's 3 days of
not fever, but it might help fever with the pain. But you might have to repeat it.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why I reacted that way? Would there be anything unique about my system, my immune system, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly there's something unique about your immune system. And, you know, you had a massive inflammatory reaction from the vaccine. So, I mean, you were primed big time.
Now, for example, I had my flu shot not that long ago. And I got really a little bit nauseated and just achy for a day. I mean, fortunately, it was on a Sunday. The next day after the shot, I was not happy. Yeah. I wasn't horribly fevered or what have you. I had just achy muscles, and then the day after that, it was great.
And that's fairly common with influenza injections.
Okay,
you know, lots of people kind of get a 12 to 24 hours of blahs. I didn't even notice it.
Okay.
I mean, the guy gave me a shot that was so smooth, I didn't even know he'd put the needle in.
Yeah, me neither.
And I had no reaction at all for it.
Okay.
So, you know, this is always individualized. It matters what your immune system response is, and yours was obviously gangbusters. Sorry about
now,
that.
Now, does that mean that Steve here, who's our caller, does that mean that he has a problem? Because
not necessarily, no. But what it tells us is that his particular immune system, you know, his killer cells, this is probably a T cell reaction, is what it sounds like.
Okay.
We've got two portions of the immune cells. Mm-hmm. We've got the B cells, the beta cells that produce antibody, and that's what we really want with this flu shot, is an antibody response. But the second part of our immune system is the T cell immunity, and this is our long-acting, memory-triggered sort of immunity. And that kicks out what we call natural killer cells. And those natural killer cells kind of can go into overdrive and destroy a whole lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like whatever happened with you is, for some reason, your T cell immunity was primed big time. And when that vaccine came in, it thought you were being infected with the chickenpox virus. Mm-hmm. And it went out to try and destroy that virus. Trouble is, of course, there was no virus there. So,
right. Okay.
But that's what happened.
So this may not happen to her at all. I mean, the
probably not.
Okay.
Yeah.
The pharmacist
yeah.
who gave me the shot said that at least 30-40% of her clients get the same kind of reaction.
Okay. Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen it be that high because you sound like you were pretty sick with it.
Yeah, I was in bed with a fever for a day and a half.
Yeah. Twice. See, everybody I know complains about the pain of the injection itself. And a fair number of people kind of get blah for a few days afterwards. But, boy, your reaction sounds a lot more than most.
Yeah, it's not pleasant at all.
Hey, right. Got to go, Steve. We got the end of the hour. It's a hard break. Can do nothing about it. Official station ID. And I'm afraid some news for a couple of minutes that for some of us may be hard to swallow. But after the news, we're back with the fourth hour, actually, the second hour here on 570 KVI. So don't go far. And we've got a couple of lines open with your questions. Go ahead and call and we'll get you in line. I promise we will get to you at 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. We'll be right back.
The preceding program was paid for by Longevity Medical Clinic and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KVI management and staff. Stay tuned after the news for Hour 2. KVI Seattle.
Tune in and tune up. From auto bodies to health.